Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I'm honored to be joined today by one of my former opponents, a coach on the other side who always did a great job for us. He's now at the University of Virginia Wise as a defensive coordinator, Shap Boyd. Shap, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Any opportunity to talk a little ball, and especially with someone that we had a close relationship with essentially for quite a few years in the old OAC.
That's right. Well, Coach, I definitely want to talk to you about defensive adjustments of all the guys I've lined up against in my career across from me on the coordinator side. You guys always gave us fits, and mostly it was because you stuck to what you guys were doing and made little adjustments that kind of drove us crazy, but at the same time, there's things we did that actually made us better to start to adjust to you. So I think it was a great back and forth. But before we do that, Coach, let's talk a little bit about your coaching journey and where you got your start.
Well, my coaching journey has been varied. I started out coaching at Middle Tennessee State and then GA to Middle Tennessee for a year. Then I went to Kentucky for 2 years with Coach Claiborne. And then my first full-time job was a Division II school up in Pennsylvania, Lock Haven. I played Division III ball, in the back of my mind, that was always what I was going to be. I was going to be a head football coach at a D3 school, maybe D2, but ultimately I thought it would be a D3 school. And to date, that hasn't worked out. But anyway, I've coached the rest of the career was between Division III and Division II schools. And I've had stops at Lycoming College when they were one of the better Division III schools in the country. And I've had stops at my alma mater, University of the South, Swanee. Also had a stop at Washington University in St. Louis, which was an awesome experience. Coaching some of the kids there with the academic backgrounds and the level of competition that we played, because we were playing Mountain Union when I was there. Mm-hmm. And then essentially, had a stop in high school, and really, I'd been a college coach for, 15 years before I went back to high school, but I had not been a coordinator at the collegiate level before I went back to high school. So really going back to high school was the thing that enabled me to put together a package. And really that package is the same package that I've been running my whole career. And the only thing we've added to it was a 3-man package, which my last couple years at Muskingum, we essentially lived in our 3-man package because we just didn't have the defensive lineman. And so, I started out as a 4-3 quarters guy and now, basically being over, under, all that stuff. And then essentially you kind of move towards the 4-2-5 deal, and now we're a 3-3-5, but we kind of morph in. Right now, we have the ability to morph into all of the above. Mm-hmm. So it's given us much more of a variety, and we're much harder to prepare for than we ever have been, as far as that goes. In essence, I've had a chance to coach at all the different levels. I've always enjoyed where I was coaching. I've never been one of those guys that was hunting the job everywhere I was. And there are some of those guys out there, mm-hmm, that wherever they are, they want to be somewhere else. And I've never felt like that was the answer to anything. I think you got to stay in the moment and be good at what you do, where you are. And, guys got a plan. Things are going to go the way they're going to go. You just got to make sure you're taking care of your stuff wherever you are. And hopefully I'm doing that and still continuing and trying to do that. So,
Coach, as you look back at your career and growing up as a coach, what are some of those lessons you've learned along the way that really impacted you and became part of who you are as a coach?
Well, I think that even starts really back in my youth. My mom and dad, you know, got divorced when I was, I don't know, 8 years old, 7 years old, whatever it was. So, and then I was fortunate, because I know there's a lot of probably coaches out there on the Pop Warner level, whatever, that maybe aren't great coaches, but I was fortunate. I had former Marines, I lived in the Washington, D.C. area, and I live not too far from Fort Belvoir. So we had a lot of military guys that took it on themselves to become, you know, little league youth coaches. And I was fortunate. I had some awesome youth coaches, and they became my mentors. And subconsciously, and that, I guess I really didn't realize what was going on, but I was going to become a lawyer when I went to college. And then about halfway through that, it was like, you know, that's really not what I want to do. I mean, you know, I want to make an impact on kids' lives, and I want to do it through athletics. I specifically wanted to do it with youth, or with, you know, teenagers, or with college age kids. I did not want to get into geriatrics, for example. Mm-hmm. Nothing against that, but that wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to be tied into athletics. So for me, I think my upbringing became a natural fuel that kind of helped me kind of figure things out as I was working my way through college. And when I got into coaching, it was a way to get a master's degree. Even though the guy that hired me said that I wasn't there to get a master's degree, I was there to coach football. But anyway, you know, I kind of used that as a deal. And then initially I always thought, well, if this doesn't work out, I'm just going to go on back and get a high school job or, you know, whatever. But it just never really happened. Some guys get fired and they end up having to go back to high school. I chose to go back to high school at one point because I wasn't happy with the situation that I was in, and we had a coaching change, and I was retained with the new staff. And so it was just one of those things where I felt like I needed to make a move. And so when I went back to high school was fine. You know, I was good with high school. I was fortunate to coach at a prep school down in Orlando, Lake Highland Prep. And, you know, we had a great run for the 2 years I was there, and then had an opportunity to get back into coaching at Jacksonville University. But I wasn't soliciting that. It just happened. It was one of those things where, but I guess what I'm saying is all my stops, every stop I've ever had, and my wife and I have this conversation all the time, I wouldn't take any of them back. And I've coached in some rural areas, and I've coached in some metropolitan areas. I've been all over, but everywhere I've been, I've met great people, and we've done, I think, some really good things. And I think that we've been able to leave things better than they were when we left. And hopefully we're having that same impact with the people that are out there. And there's a lot of guys that I've coached that, you know, either were military, and some of those guys are retiring, but, you know, military and or coaches. And hopefully we impacted them enough to where they're doing some good things where they are. So the influences started when I was young.
And Coach, you mentioned that you started to develop your defense, and it's evolved over time. And, you know, I got to actually see some of that evolution. I do remember the point when you had to go to a 3-man front, you know, coming off a year when you guys just had a great group of 4-down linemen. And then the next year you were into a 3-man front. But as I mentioned early, I think, you know, my respect for you comes first learning of you by being an opponent and seeing the different things you were doing in our conference, which is an incredibly competitive conference. And tell a quick story, I guess, of one of those adjustments. We were playing at your place, and playing at Muskingum is always a difficult thing for us at BW. I'm not sure why. I can remember that particular year when we got off the bus, and you guys are kind of in a rural setting. There's a tree full of vultures, and these huge birds are just looking down on our guys as we're coming in. And we're like, wow, that's pretty ominous. Like, you know, for you guys, you couldn't write a better script than how you intimidate opponent. You put some vultures in the tree as we're getting off the bus. But we get into that game, and we were heavy 11 and 12 team, a little bit of 21. We like to run the power, whether that was one back or two back power. And that was kind of our thing that year that we were hanging our hat on. And, you know, we went into that game, and initially we see what looked like you guys were, I think, a 4-3 base. You'd play a lot of 4-2 box with that guy walked out. on the slot receiver. And so we saw, instead of a 4-2 box, we saw a 4-1, which had us licking our chops. And, you know, we're trying to run the power in. We're getting stuffed every single time. Looks like there's a big hole there, and then someone comes in and makes the tackle. And I don't remember which linebacker he was at the time. There was a kid I coached when I was a head football coach at Brush High School, probably a freshman I was there, but he ended up playing for you, Alex Simmons. And I don't remember if it was him or your other linebacker. And what you did is you took him and put him, instead of like in a 30, typically where you would see your linebacker, you put him on the outside on the hip of the defensive end. And you brought him down pretty close to the line. He might have been like 3 yards off the line of scrimmage. And so you guys did a good job of forcing the cutback, which looked like, as we're seeing it in the game and seeing it from upstairs, like, wow, there's a huge cavity there. Our guy's seeing he's cutting back, and then all of a sudden he's chopped down at the line. Well, your guy was just essentially scraping into that gap, and we couldn't see him. The back couldn't see him. And our deuce block, our guys on the double team who typically would come off to him, couldn't see him because they're climbing and he's coming from a level that they're typically not used to. So I thought, man, that was a great adjustment. Even when we saw it, we had a hard time getting our guys to understand where to put their eyes to pick that up. And it took, I don't know if we ever ran the power successfully in that game. You guys kind of took it away, but those were the kind of things we would see from you. And I got, you know, by the time it's my fifth season there and facing you, you know, it got to the point where we would sit in that room and say, okay, what's he going to do to take away our best stuff? And it was almost like it started to become a chess match. And, you know, what I saw though, is you guys kind of, you didn't bastardize your defense. You didn't go to a junk defense. You stuck within what you were doing and made some little adjustments like that, that would make things tough.
Yeah, that's, in a nutshell, that's pretty much what we've done, I guess, or what I've done wherever I've been. And you know the deal. I mean, there are a lot of people when you, because we'll see it from the defensive perspective. Their offense changes every week. Well, the one thing I know about their offense changing every week is they're not going to have all the answers. They're going to need to stop whatever we do. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the way that you mentioned that and the way you phrased that was exactly right. You know, what is it that you do well? You know, I mean, so what, make them beat you left-handed. That, you know, the old adage that people used to always say, you know, make them beat you left-handed. So that's how we started Sunday. You know, we started Sunday with, you know, if you go back to one back stuff, how are we going to handle, where do we want our front? Where do we want our three technique? Where do we want our bubble? Where do we want our bubbles? Okay. And really being in a too high defense for a long, long time, my whole concept with the two high was I needed to figure out a way, because formationally you can spread me out and you can get the box you want. Well, how do I get the illusion that you have the box you want, but you don't really have it? And the only way you can do that is through line movements. So when I've got my 2D box and you're looking like you're giving me 10 personnel. So you've got basically a 4-1 box and you've got everybody else displaced out of the box, things like that. Well, for us, we have to do things to secure the box. And if you're giving your Mike two gaps, he can't do it. Mm-hmm. So the number one thing is you got to protect your Mike. At least that was our deal with the 4-3. And so line movements and some of the things that probably jacked with what you were talking about was we probably had some different line movements that we were doing that were eating up gaps and forcing people to take things a little bit further or a little bit wider than what they want to do. And typically when that happens, it disrupts your timing and it doesn't unfold the way you anticipated it or the way you worked on it all week long. So, but for us, whenever we bump linebackers and whenever we were doing those things, we had different calls that we would use to essentially make you run east and west. So everything that we've done, and it doesn't matter whether I've been in a three person, a 3-3-5, a 4-3, whatever the defense we've been in, everything was spill. Everything was spill. And I mean, if there's one thing that you can draw up about our defense, you can say, well, they're going to spill everything. Mm-hmm. And essentially that's the bottom line. We don't box anything. If I have a slot receiver blocking a safety on the perimeter and the safety feels like the ball is working his way, he has the green light to be, if he's going to be wrong, he's wrong inside. He's not my deep safety, mm-hmm. my outside linebacker, whatever. Okay. But be wrong inside, make it bounce one more gap. So everything for us is make it run east and west. And ultimately it doesn't matter what defense you're in. If they're running sideline to sideline, they're not making yards. If they're creasing you, if you're not sound in the box and you're giving up the A and the B gap, you got issues. So really everything kind of works back to that. And then how do you do a two, how do you stay in two high and control all the gaps? The only way you can do it is to use line movements, especially if you're going to play cover two or do some other things. And so anyway, that's kind of where, I guess, if you have a derivative, and it doesn't matter what defense we're in, you know, I mean, we're basically basing here out of 3-3-5 personnel. And, you know, the defense here, I guess when we got here a couple of years ago, was 150th in the nation in total defense. And last year, going into the last game of the year, we were 9th in the nation in total defense after two seasons. But we played Shepherd and we ended up 34th. So, I mean, you know, but they ended up having a, you know, whatever is what it is. But bottom line is you got to do things to control the box. And for us, certainly in the old days with line movements, and it's still part of what we do. So anyway.
Well, and you've been able to evolve over time. And like you said, you had the need to go to a three down front, which typically wasn't what you do. But for you, it's an evolution. It's not going to be something completely different, but the package, you know, you found a way to make sure from a teaching perspective, a terminology perspective, that it fits into your package of what you're doing. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, that process and being able to, you know, evolve like that, add those things in. What does a coach, a defensive coach, need to be sure he's doing so that it doesn't become something that is, you know, completely foreign to your guys as you go into an install or as you adjust to it?
Well, I mean, to really, and as an offensive coach, you probably have heard this, defensively, if we don't stop the run, we don't win. And you may not run the ball more than five times a game. But if on those five times, if you're moving the sticks and you're picking up first downs, then we don't control the game. If we control the run, we control the game, because now I know you're when you're throwing the ball and all those things. So ultimately, you have to have your run fits, just cross your T's and dot your I's. And if you don't have your run fits where they need to be, you're going to end up paying a price. Well, the bottom line is a lot of young coaches – And me back in the old days, I mean, I have a playbook that could be 180, 200 pages long. But you know what? It's a cookbook. Now it's a cookbook. Probably back then, when I was in high school, we ran all that stuff. I mean, how we practiced it, probably not very well. How did we get run fits for everything? Probably not very well. But we had kids that could play. You know, I mean, it still goes back to your Johnnies and Joes. But ultimately, for us now, how can we get run fits? If I can't get run fits into that, okay, do we want to have – how many goal line defenses do we need to have? You know, how many different things do we need to have? Because ultimately, we can't rep it all. Mm-hmm. So everything goes back to how many reps can we get? How can we make coaching similar? So when we evolved from a four-man to our three-man, essentially – we decided with our three-man front, all we had to do is move our front. If we move our front in the right direction or in the proper direction, all we're doing is putting our defense back into over and under. If we're moving our front to over and under, our linebackers' run fits are the same. They're the same whether we lined up in a static 4-3 or whether or a 4-2-5 or whether we moved to it. And essentially, that's what we've done with our three-man front. We end up moving to it. But in doing it, we kept the run fits essentially the same. So when we do go back to a four-man front, the run fits are no different. And so we found a way to, when we put new stuff in, we try and make it to where it's not new. it looks new to you. It looks new to the offense. But what we're really doing is not new.
Right.
The same run fits apply. We're just doing it from a different location. We're getting there a different way, but the run fits will still fit. So as long as I can get my run fits in, we should be pretty good to go as far as. But that to me is the biggest thing up front. You know, I can have 1,000 different things that we can do. But the reality of it is I can't practice all those things.
Right.
So if I can't practice them, what's the point? And then ultimately, if I'm playing you and, you know, your big thing is power, then ultimately I need to figure out how we want to fit the power that week. You know, all the different looks you have for power, typically when you're breaking down games, you have anywhere from, if you're playing somebody middle of the season towards the end, you have, you know, I mean, typically we're working off of 3 games for statistics, but you might look at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and if it's the last game of the year and it's a game that's, you know, a lot's riding on, you're seeing everything. So, you know, ultimately, it's still about being able to fit the run. Obviously, the passing stuff is a different animal, but we have to make sure that our linebackers are comfortable. And by keeping consistency or keeping continuity between, and even with our pressures and things like that, we just run. All it is we're giving you the same eyewash you give us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're lining up in a different formation and running power 5 different ways, and we're doing the same thing on defense.
Right. Coach, when you look at, and you brought up, you know, we got to be able to practice it. We have to be able to get good at this week. And I ask offensive coordinators this question all the time, you know, how much can you carry into a game? You know, for the offensive guys, it's how many plays can you carry? Maybe how many formations can you carry and actually rep it and get good at it that week? How do you approach that from the defensive side? Is there a number you're looking for to keep that manageable? And for you as a play caller too, as the defensive caller, you know, I say it all the time, like, hey, this is great. This is a great idea. But like, if I don't feel confident in it, you know, I might have it on the call sheet, but it's just taking up space. I'm probably not going to call it.
Yeah. Well, I'll touch on, let's say we install something new that we think we're going to like, okay. Let's say we're playing a wing T team. Okay, just because the reads and the things are a little bit different for them than, or you're playing an option team,
mm-hmm.
a little bit different than what you're doing on a normal daily basis. So what we do from a defensive perspective is I call it building up reps. So we're playing an option team week 5. We'll put 2 or 3 option plays into every script
mm-hmm.
throughout the week of week 1,
mm-hmm.
and then week 2, and then week 3. Because, A, you have to be able to send the option anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else could be running it. But at the same time, I need to be building up reps for that particular thing because I'm not going to get enough reps that week. There won't be enough reps for me to get everything I need. Same thing with empty, okay? Empty. You may go through a whole season and never see empty, but you better be repping it, you know. Now, you can spend 30 minutes or an hour and a half and work empty the whole practice. But that's not going to be as good if you take 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, and 5 minutes here. Working through the season doing it as opposed to doing it for an hour during your camp. You need to keep repping the stuff. It doesn't have to be long. It just has to be something that stays in their thought process. And so certainly within every 2 weeks, you better be doing something. With us, empty's always one of the things. I mean, there's the things you have to have answers for. You have to have answers for unbalanced. You have to have answers for option. You have to have answers for empty and or muddle. And muddle, you know, I never really saw muddle until I went back to high school.
Yeah.
then I had to have all kinds of answers for muddle. But you know what? Those answers have come back and they've been useful in college because we had to work at it so much more in high school. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't not work on it in college. But it's just part of what we do now. It's built into our camp. You know, during a team period, we're going to throw a muddle huddle in there. So, again, we're building up reps. Did the other team run it? Did they show it on film? Not necessarily. You know, coach, I remember seeing that on film. Don't worry about it. I mean, but we got to build up things. And
yeah.
we got to, and that's how we go about getting extra reps at what we need the most. And then everything's a percentage. I mean, if you're running power 70% of your running plays, then we're probably repping power 70% of what we do from a defensive perspective, mm-hmm. just as a base. Having said that, there are certain things that I know you could do. So I have to have an idea as to what I know will hurt our defense. And then we're going to continue to rep those things. So we're repping what you do. Then we're repping the few things that we know that you could do that we feel would be problematic to us. And then we're also looking at the things where people have exploited us, you know, in the previous three or four games. You know, what did we jack up that enabled people to move the ball on us that someone's looking at that saying, well, we're going to at least give it a shot and see if they take care of business, see if they've corrected it. So those are all the different things, but typically you can't get it all done in a week. So we have to figure out a way that I call it stealing reps. We got to figure out a way to steal reps, and we got to build them up. And if I know I'm going to have different things that are going to be kind of like, there's things in spring football that we work every day that, you know, we thought we weren't great at in the fall. And those are the kinds of things that we'll have the same type of thing going into camp this year. There'll be two or three things that we know we have to get better at. Whether other teams are going to exploit us there or not, we still have to get better there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anyway.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that. I think the cumulative effect of reps is something we forget about. So, you know, in looking at, you know, maybe some of the young guys who've been on my coaching staff would come in and say, hey, you know, this would really work against them. And I'd say, you know, it's great, but I probably can only afford to give it about 8 reps this week. Oh, well, that, you know, that's not bad. Well, yeah, but our other plays have hundreds of reps because we've been working them all camp long. And I'd always feel more comfortable adjusting off of some of those things we always did than trying to do something that maybe terminology-wise would fit, but we haven't really repped, because it's, especially if you look at the passing game, it really is a lot different for your guy who has settled in and gotten used to doing things. So I agree with you 100% that you need to think of reps not just in terms of that week, but how much have you worked that stuff over the course of the season?
Correct. And then we'll put something in. We got something we think we want to use against B-Dub. And we're repping it. The B-Dub week gets there. It's like, nah, mm-hmm. This is not ready for prime time yet. So, no, you know. Coach, how come we're going to run it. It's just not going to be this week. You know, we're not where we need to be yet. So, and ultimately, that's twofold. Because if your coaches aren't believing in it, well, as the coordinator, you know if they're believing in it or not. Your players definitely aren't believing in it.
Right.
Or your coaches may be all in with you. You know, they may be all on board, but the execution on the field is not where it needs to be. So, I mean, there's more than one way to skin that cat and to look at it, but it's still a big picture. You can't get too much tunnel vision in this deal, or you lose sight of some of the other things that you got to be, I guess, picking up on.
To wrap up this discussion on, you know, defensive adjustments and evolving your defense, what tips do you have to our listeners out there that you know, can help them be effective through the course of the season as they look at, you know, putting together their game plan and maybe making some adjustments that that could help them out on game day?
I think one of the things that as a young coach, that if you try and look forward within the deal, you know, a lot of people are working on games, you know, and they're really breaking down, in most cases, at minimum, the three previous games. Try and have wrinkles that you're building in as you go. It's the same thing offenses do. I mean, you're going, okay, what your last three games, we really focused on these three things. Okay, we're going back to something that we did game two, okay? Because they're probably not studying that game film as much. But I think there's things that people can do and you can build into your arsenal as you go through the season. I don't think you have to have everything necessarily. I mean, you can install everything in camp, but you don't need to show everything that day one of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can whip you, when I was coaching at Kentucky, LSU, that was Arnsbarger was just stepping down and it was Archer, but they didn't do anything. I mean, they ran like two fronts and one coverage or two coverages. They really didn't do a lot. But they didn't have to. So if my first answer in some cases is nothing, you mm-hmm. prove to me that you can execute and make the play on what I'm doing, what my base is. Once you prove to me that you can handle getting the ball out to number two on the bubble or whatever it is, then I'll make my adjustment. And sometimes, you know, it's the other way around. Sometimes you're trying to be a step ahead and whatever else. But a lot of times it's, you show me that you can make those plays, and then I'll go through the system and the different checks and the different tweaks that I have to handle what you're doing. And I think sometimes offensive coaches, sometimes you have what you want, then you motion, and you're not. And the thing that is interesting is you don't always know how the defense is going to respond. So the more people you move, the more variables you bring into the equation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're better off just setting them down and going with what you got. Sometimes you're better off, you know, because you can't practice all the different things that you might get.
Right.
And that's what we go back to. I mean, defensively, we spend a lot of time in the office. Okay. And that's because we, what if, well, you know, we're going to take care of the percentages for 90% of what we're doing. And then the what if part, you know, the things that you haven't done, the things that you haven't shown, the things that you haven't shown a propensity to do, you know, I'm not going to spend 90% of my time working on the what ifs. You know, mm-hmm. We worry about what you do, what you have done, what we know you're capable of. And then we understand there's certain progressions that come off of plays or certain things that come off that. And then we'll start looking at those things. Okay, well, they could do this. They could do this. And those are the things that we point out during film. And then we'll add those in. Like leaking a back out on a wheel route, for example. I mean, you don't even show it on film, but we're going to leak that son of a gun out multiple times during practice that week, because that's the worst case scenario for that linebacker on the backside.
Right.
And just making sure that he handles it. And I just think you have to sit down, kind of map out the season, kind of figure out that, you know, I'd like to be utilizing this stuff initially. As we move into week three or four, we should be able to, we're building up reps on certain things, and we should be able to bring in, introduce a couple of new things onto film that other people wouldn't have seen, that we know will be a fine to show and trying to do all your things during week one. And the bottom line is, with defense, it's the X's and the O's. It's about being good at what you do. And if you can be good at two or three things, and be good, and that, if that's all you can be good at, then that's all you should do. That's all you should do. Get good at what you can do. And you know what? It's probably going to be a lot better than what you think. But when you start grab bagging things, and you start, and then you're not good at anything, and that's, I think, the dilemma a lot of people get into. When you're not good at anything, good luck. So, you know, and ultimately, you know, my head coach that I've got here, Coach Dameron, that I've known him for a long time, was a high school guy in Florida and Kentucky, and then at Eastern Kentucky. But, you know, his thing is, we've got to be really good at base. Because I'm not telling you what base is. I'm just saying we've got to be really good at base. Well, as a coordinator, when the kids are kind of out of rhythm and out of sorts, we get back to base.
Right.
We get back to base. We get back to the comfort level so that we can reestablish the rhythm we want. And it's the one thing that we know our kids know how to play. And there we got all the adjustments, and we got all the calls and all the different things to be good in base. But some people think, well, I need all this. I need this. I need this. We got to do this. We got to do this. Well, if you're doing all that stuff, you're not getting your run fits, because you can't get run fits versus all those different things. The base goes to pot. Your base is not good. And then you got all these other little things that are going on. So, I mean, ultimately, you hurt yourself by doing too much. And I think people are always worried about not having enough. I don't know. I'm not so sure that not having enough is a – I'd rather off on an error there than have too much crap in there that you can't practice at all, and then you suck at everything.
Right. So. Well, Coach, I appreciate you taking the time here to talk some ball with us. We'd love to have you back again. I think you have some great outlooks on defense. You do some great things. And, you know, best of luck to you and UVA-wise this season. And we'll be watching you.
I appreciate it, Coach. And it's good catching up with you.
thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.